Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Star Center Olympus, where we assemble monthly to explore the vast spiritual legacy bequeathed to us through the Unarian revelations. I am Hercules Invictus. The Unarius Academy of Science represents a vast spiritual organization of highly evolved beings, generically referred to as the Unarius Brothers, whose teachings were channeled by Ernest and Ruth Norman and are disseminated by the Academy. Echoes of Olympus reverberate throughout the vast Unarius cosmology. The first inspired tome penned by Ernest L. Norman was titled The Elysium. The five volumes of the Pulse of Creation series, which contain many of the Unarian core teachings, are titled The Voice of Venus, The Voice of Eros, The Voice of Hermes, The Voice of Orion, The Voice of Neus, Eleusim, and Unarius. Classical columns and Hellenic statuary grace the public areas of the Unarius building to honor the Golden Age of Greece. And in the Unarius Academy of Sciences Star Center, a mural commemorates fabled Atlantis at the apex of her glory. These Olympian elements first drew my attention to Unarius, but the greater my exposure to this organization, the more impressed I become with the depth and vastness of Unarius's cosmic vision, the positivity of their message, and their dedication to continuing the work of their founders. Mount Olympus greatly honors the vast contributions of the Unarius Brothers and the Unarius Academy of Science to the evolution of human consciousness. We are currently building bridges to the Golden Age light that shines brightly throughout their collective lore. Now, the idea that extraterrestrial beings might inhabit the cosmos is not uncommon, nor is it new. The ancient Greeks wrote about the possibility that the skies were populated by gods and men, and modern surveys suggest that approximately 80% of the American populace think that it's likely that aliens exist on other worlds. So starts an article on the SETI Institute's website about UFOs. However, it goes on to mention some typical problems in logic that astronomers and physicists cite as to why there is no widespread scientific acceptance of UFOs or interstellar travel. Tonight, two Unarians, Tracy Lynn Kennedy and Lamy Calvert, will bring to us Unarius's perspectives on these and other questions. Greetings, Tracy and Lamy. How are you?
Oh, it's so nice to be with you, Hercules.
Same here.
Hi, Hercules.
Hello, how are you?
Great to talk to you.
I've been looking forward to this all day. Okay, we will start. Lamy, you want to go first this time and then Tracy?
Sure.
Sure.
And if it's okay with you, I'd like to add to the framework of your wonderful intro and also give a personal preamble before I answer the first question.
Onward.
So,
okay.
Thank you. As much as people tend to peg Unarius as a religion, flying saucer group, or pseudoscience, Unarius is an acronym for Universal Articulate an Interdimensional Understanding of Science. And if people took the time to read the core textbook, The Infinite Concept of Cosmic Creation, or even an introductory book like the ones you mentioned, like Voice of Venus, that definition should be apparent to any truth seeker with an open mind. Yet, Unarius is not trying to reach or convince everyone, only those who are ready and seeking, because they've been preconditioned in past lives or on the inner in between lives. So I'm going to give you a personal example. My dad was an aeronautical engineer for McDonnell Douglas, and in our discussions, he wanted logical reasons for my points of view. So I took college classes in logic, geometry, and physics, but they didn't help much with the topic of UFOs because you have to be able to think outside the box. And I had that preconditioning, so the concept made sense to me. My father didn't, so he never reached escape velocity, so to speak, from third dimensional logic. So, okay, that's my little preamble.
Thank you very much. Tracy, do you have a preamble?
Sure, not the same as Lonnie's, but other than that, I, at a very young age, probably 15 years old, saw a UFO. I was not afraid of it. It was very exciting to me and started me on a quest to understand what they were. And I actually, this is in high school, I actually wrote a research paper, and this was 45 plus years ago, about UFOs, and that just started my interest in it. And I think a lot of people have seen UFOs have that wonderful positive experience of, oh my gosh, what is that? Because it's pretty exciting when you see one.
Yes, it certainly is. And now with the disclosure that's happening, even though there's just a little disclosure, it's still something. And it'll open the door to other things in the future. And Unarius has been right about many things that initially were denied, but now they're scientifically accepted. So I'm sure the Unarius revelations were shed light on a lot of things that come to pass. Now we'll go back to logic and earth science. Rocket engines require massive energy supplies, no matter if the fuel is chemical, nuclear, or antimatter. So how would they overcome the obstacle that people bring up about the vast distances involved in space travel? Mommy?
Space is not empty. It is filled with not only gravitation and electromagnetic fields, but many forces and fields that the scientist, the astrophysicist, etc., knows nothing about. And these forces are free to use for fuel, if you know how, if you don't have, and you don't have to carry them on board. You know, it's like they talk so much about, so much fuel that they have to carry on board. So the extraterrestrials have mapped out the lines of force in the cosmos and use them just like we use freeways. Related point is that just like we have knowledge of how to change matter into different states like solid, liquid, gas, etc., they know how to change the atomic structures of the metal of the ship. And adding to this knowledge of how to change the polarities of the ship, the frequency or oscillation rate, they can negate the forces of gravity and go wherever they want at tremendous. There's many different types of ships, but if someone wants to see a typical example of a saucer or scout ship type, they can find helpful diagram online of one George Damski photographed and wrote in.
Mm-hmm.
So that's helpful.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Tracy?
I am not going to be talking about the technical aspect in the way that Lonnie has more of an understanding, so I will pass on
those
particular questions.
Okay. I remembered as you were speaking, Lonnie, about like one of the things that recently I learned that Unarius was right about all along. Unarius has always insisted that there were countless planets that are capable of sustaining human or humanoid life. And that was always scoffed at and ridiculed. And now science tells us that there are countless planets in our galaxy that could sustain Earth life. So that's just one of many examples. Okay,
yes,
Lonnie,
and there'll be a lot more.
Yes.
Yeah, and it wasn't until about 30 years ago when scientists finally acknowledged that they did actually see planets that could hold life on it in our universe. And it's like it took, you know, up until 30 years ago, Unarius back in 1954 championed this idea that there are physical planets throughout the universe, throughout, you know, the galaxy, throughout the universes, and then also non-atomic planets that we can't see that are exist in a higher frequency band. So there's a lot more for scientists to yet discover, but you're absolutely right. Unarius has validated or has information that scientists are, you know, finally beginning to validate, and it's very exciting to see all of this come to fruition.
Yes, it is. I find it very satisfying as well. Okay, what about, like, we talked about fuel, and what about the vast amount of times that scientists believe it would take to go from place to place. And you touched upon this, Lonnie, in your last answer. Let's expand upon that a bit more.
Okay. Well, first of all, the statement involves the assumption that the speed of light is constant in the universe, which seems kind of arrogant and Earth or egocentric, considering that we've only managed to physically travel to the moon so far. And according to the advanced space brothers that the co-founders communicated with, light actually accelerates in space. And to give you an example, Ernest L. Norman, who was an advanced clairvoyant, had clear psychic memory of having lived on the planet Lemuria, not Lemuria here on Earth, but the planet Lemuria, which is near to the center of the galaxy. And around 160,000 years ago, he was one of 11 scientists who traveled 700 light years to Earth. It was actually, they weren't headed to Earth, but crash landed here. But anyway, and they reached it in 6 or 7 years by traveling 100 times the speed of light. However, they didn't even waste those relatively few years, 6 or 7 years, because their ship was robotically controlled, so they were able to be in a state of suspended animation. So there you go. And I think I've read somewhere else that it could actually be up to, like, you know, 1,000 times the speed of light. So, wow. Again, our perspective is so limited, and we base, you know, what supposedly is happening in the cosmos by what they can measure here on Earth, which is very, as I said, egocentric,
Earth-centric. Very much so. And I will go to that in the next question. But before I do, Tracy, is there anything you'd like to add to that? I know you're not going to answer as technically as Lonnie, but do you have any thoughts on what she said?
Nothing more other than that. It's mind expanding. And again, having an open mind would help you to conceive, because even just thinking about the speed of light and what we now can do with lasers that are, you know, relatively new in the last 60, 70 years. And again, it's just something that wasn't, you know, a couple hundred years ago, people wouldn't have thought that could even be possible. So it's the same thing with space travel. It's something that, just because we don't understand it and don't have this technology yet on our planet, doesn't mean that it can't exist and it's not real, and it is very real.
And the ancient astronauts folks have done a great job in showing us how many things in our own past display a technology that either we've only recently attained or that we haven't yet attained. So we tend not to lend credence to those as a culture either, those things, even though we have the physical artifacts and the evidence of our eyes.
Exactly. You just have to want to find it, and you will. There's plenty of historical evidence out there for people who are really want to find it.
Now, in terms of why people think that you can't find it, I've heard this and it always puzzled me. But how about the folks who say that we're not picking up a radar or radio signals or TV signals from outer space, and therefore that proves that there's nothing intelligent in outer space?
Well,
that's a very close-minded view.
Let me start out by saying Dr. Norman, again, as advanced clairvoyant, made psychic contact, and not traveling astrally or with a silver cord or anything, but actually something more like Star Trek of, you know, you're going to beam down on the planet, a transporter, right? Something like that. But anyway, so he wrote a whole book on Mars and the people that are living underground, and that they're very aware of us, and they can receive our broadcasts anytime they wish, if they felt it was of value. The same is true for other planets in our solar system. However, the statement assumes that physically receiving an electronic signal that we send out wherever they happen to live is the only way that they have of knowing or learning about us, which is a false premise. They can do many things. They can pick up the signals physically when they're flying in the area. They can collect samples of whatever they want to study via robot-controlled scout ships. They have people stationed here on Earth, or simply just tune in psychically. Clairvoyance isn't limited by time or space.
Very true and very powerful. Tracy?
Another aspect of that is just because they say that we aren't picking it up with the radio signals, we also may not be using the right instrumentation, as Lonnie talked about, being psychic and being able to clairvoyantly receive that information. So the people are saying it's not real because it doesn't exist and we can't pick it up. It's because we don't have or aren't using the right instrumentation to receive that information. So, again, it's a lack of open-mindedness to say flat out it isn't so.
And our government.
Yeah, it'll be like maybe like someone in the past, you know, where they had just developed radio but not TV and say, well, you know, something like TV can't exist because we can't get it. We can't see it.
And that happened to me in Greece when I was a kid. It was not as connected to the rest of the world as it is now, especially in the rural areas up in the mountains. And I was describing television to them. They had radios, but I was describing television to them. And my uncle hit me. And I asked him why he hit me. And he goes, because I'm lying and I'm talking foolish.
Oh, no.
Wow.
You poor thing.
So,
that is very true.
It's
hard for people.
People judge reality by what little piece of it they happen to know and understand. And I've also heard these as justifications for our not moving forward with our exploration of space, that it's difficult, that it's costly, and the money can be spent on better things, we have to worry about wars and the expense of wars, or wars would interfere with it, there's too much hate in the world and greed and materialism, and we're not focused on the humanity and its problems here, so we shouldn't even turn our face to the heavens. How would you answer that as a Unarian?
Well, you know, it's funny that we just had a chapter about that. Uriel wrote about it. I can't remember the date now. Maybe, Tracy, you remember it. But there was an event where the Russians and the cosmonauts and the American astronauts worked together. This was during the Cold War, I think. And they shook hands in space, and it was a huge event. And what Uriel was just, you know, so excited about this because she said, you know, everybody was looking upwards. They were turning their heads and hopefully expectant of this event to take place. And it was such a positive thing, and their consciousnesses were open. And so, you know, the brothers could provide a lot more healing energies and so forth too. But, I mean, the point being about what you said is it brought people together to see this event taking place out in space between, again, two proven enemies. I mean, who would have thought that they could get together and do this, work together?
And the same thing happened when...
Go ahead.
Just quick, along the lines of what Lonnie was saying, and Lonnie, I don't remember the date. I want to say it was like late 70s. But the same thing happened landed on the moon. Landed on the moon, and the whole world was focused on that. It was... and the Unarius said the same thing, that this was a wonderful opportunity because everybody had their consciousness focused upward on something happening that was outside of themselves, and it was exciting. And here's, you know, space age taking place. And the brothers used that opportunity to project to everybody because their consciousness was open. So, it's a wonderful – and I think your point is well taken, Hercules, but one of the things that has been shown is that when we started looking at space exploration and all this new technology that was needed that hadn't yet been developed, what happened was it spilled over into our everyday life. One of the products that we have is nonstick frying pans, Teflon, as usual, and I know Teflon is carcinogenic, but it also led to a whole new area of ways to cook food and to do a lot of different things. It's used in all kinds of things. So we don't know when we think outside of the box, other things happen, have a spillover effect and can be very positive in our day-to-day life and in how we live our life and make it easier for us.
Oh, well, certainly so. As you pointed out, our efforts to go to space have given us many great things. And one of the things that puzzles me is that there's still a lot of things happening in space with the United States and with other countries. Other countries now have space programs, and they're doing a lot of things. So we're just not focused on it. We focused briefly on Space Force when our former president started that, but we're not focusing as a planet on all the wonderful things that are happening in the space station and beyond the space station with all the probes going to all the planets. The information is there, but it's not public knowledge. There seems to be a resistance to looking up to the heavens, either metaphorically or literally.
Or at least it's not front page.
Right.
Correct.
You have to hunt online for it.
Yeah. And even though there's a lot of war going on our planet, one of the things that's proven itself over and over again is when countries go to war, there's a lot of money being made for all the people that are involved in providing the everything that has to do with war. So wars are, we don't want them, but a lot of people do want them because they make money from it, which is a sad state of our civilization, but that's where we still are on our planet. So when people start looking upwards at space and thinking about what's out there and what are the possibilities of, working together with the different countries on our planet towards space travel, that's a real positive. And thinking, oh my gosh, what can we have? And this already exists on other planets throughout our galaxy where these planets are working together and sharing information. And that's happening on a smaller level with the different countries working together on international space stations, opening that mind, that concept to what can happen when we are open to that on our planet to space travel and learning from other planets who are more advanced than us, who want to share information. And that's what we have to look forward to in our future. But it's just, the very, very beginning seedlings are being planted in people's mind with the space travel that we're doing right now.
So all the objections that are uniformly and usually given why we're not getting visited from space and why we can't go from space don't really carry any weight when you think them through.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
Well, yeah. I mean, she brought up a good point, a lot of good points as far as, why, and I think that'll come up more too in a little bit later about, what their purpose is of visiting us, like why would they want to visit us, versus our objectives and why we would want what the technology that they have, right? They would want to just use it for wars and stuff. So if they want to, or, why would they want to come here? It's like with all of this stuff going on. But, they have a whole different mindset of, as far as when you're spiritually advanced, you want to help all people. It's not just, your country, nationalistic or, yourself or your tribe, your community, whatever. It's everybody, rich and poor, all different races and nationalities and all that kind of stuff. It's you just want to be of service. So it's hard for people to relate to that because we're not at that point.
No, obviously we're not, unfortunately. Tracy?
Well, it's a very valid statement that Lonnie said, and it is going to be something that more and more people hopefully will be open to this concept, as, you know, when we do have, again, as we've had in previous civilizations on our planet, when we do have contact with beings from other worlds, and we already have had that contact many, many times, but when we have it in a physical way, that it has to be, people have to be open to the idea that, again, they're not coming to harm us. They're not coming to take anything from us. They're not coming to gather any intelligence from us, because goodness knows we don't have much intelligence on our planet. It's to help them, to be of service and be an example of what our potential can be, because this already exists on other planets. So it's very exciting, but we're at the tipping point now where, gosh, 60, 40 years ago, 35 years ago, when I first started studying Unarius, not too many people believed in UFOs, and now up to over 80% of people believe in UFOs. Mm-hmm. So we've come a long way very fast in a short amount of time in the grand scheme of things, and I think that it's continuing, this momentum is building and building as younger and younger people incarnate who are more open, who perhaps have had this preconditioning, who aren't so close-minded to be open to the possibilities of a positive and progressive future that includes contact with intelligent people. And the fears that people have are directly related to past life experiences, which is one of the big things that Unarius teaches. Yes. And has outlined in its curriculum, is, you know, anytime we have an emotional reaction to something, it's based in our past of something that we were involved in. And we have had on our planet, we have had on other planets, people have been involved in memories of warring spaceships, of different aspects that weren't positive. But that's just one small concept of spaceships. And the other side that people aren't mostly awake to and aware of is the positive aspect of interplanetary travel that we had in Atlantis, we had in Lemuria, we had on different planets throughout the galaxy, and it still exists. So it's a wonderful concept that I really look forward to more and more people being open to this idea that, you know, space travel is real. It's happening all the time. Just because we're not aware of it and we can't see it and we don't have the instrumentation to see the spaceships flying through the air doesn't mean that it doesn't exist.
And that's a very good point. And as Lani pointed out, that it's not on the front page, so a lot of people don't see it. So even what little we're doing at this particular point in time, most people don't know about it. We live in a time of conspiracy theories, too, where everybody's out to get you in one way or another. And my wife and I are binge-watching X-Files, so we could understand how that became so prevalent in our culture, that way of looking at things. How do you combat that and focus instead on a positive and progressive future?
You mean like the conspiracy theories and so on and so forth?
Sure, where there are evil lizard UFO people who are there, and that the other UFO people are their slaves, and they're out to control you or do things to your reproductive system, or inseminate you so that you give birth to hybrid babies that will then kill everybody and take our planet. And there's a lot of stories going around, and a lot of people believe them. Like recently there was a young man who killed his two children because he believed that they had reptilian DNA and he didn't want them to grow up to be monsters. I found that out today on YouTube. So there's a lot of negativity and a lot of suspicion around the whole concept of ETs. And it's permeated our culture beyond our entertainment now into the beliefs of people. So how do we fight that? Because even Stephen Greer, who started the Disclosure Network, says that in his experience, all the ETs that are here working with us are positive ETs.
Yeah,
that's a really good question. Yeah, and Lani, do you want to tackle that one first?
Well, I was going to say, you know, Tracy, when she mentioned about as far as past lives and people themselves that are fearful of these things happening or writing about these things happening are remembering past lives that they've been involved in. And they don't necessarily, because they don't have clairvoyance, they don't know where it's coming from, but those experiences are stored in their psychic anatomy, which goes with them from life to life. So they are going to color or inform their view of reality, what's happening. And so that's one aspect. But you know, like when people come up with these theories because of wanting to make it seem like they are, you know, the grays with the big heads or little green men with antennas or, you know, whatever, you know, predatory that they're going to take over, you know, besides psychic memories, past life memories, whether they're conscious of them or not. You know, the government, and this was another kind of part of another question, but wanted to let that image or those ideas continue to make it seem like, you know, the concept of UFOs was silly, was stupid, was, you know, unbelievable, wasn't scientific, all that stuff. So, you know, so they whether they perpetuated those or just said, fine, you know, you can print something like that and ha-ha. There's another aspect to this where, as I was talking about, the Space Brothers are aware of, you know, everything that's going on, if they want to be, on planet Earth. And they're not going to interfere because it's kind of like the prime directive on Star Trek. You know, we have our own evolution. We're kind of here fighting it out as we hopefully move forward in our spiritual progression, slowly but surely. But still, they are doing whatever they can. I mean, they're not going to come down here and physically interrupt us. But as I mentioned before, they do have people that are here on the planet that are helping. They can inspire from the inner. Then you have people like, you know, Ernest and Ruth Norman, who actually incarnated here to teach and to help and disseminate all of this correct information, you know, for people who are ready. And there was another thing too. I just lost it. But so they're helping in many ways. I know what it was. So this came up when David was talking about you know, the first time that we started seeing spaceships on a regular basis, at least in the current modern age, was after we exploded the atom bomb. You know, because that the vibrations from that had an effect on, you know, other planets around us, and they wanted to see, well, you know, what are we doing? It's kind of like babies playing with knives. They're just, let's see what happens when we blow this up. You know, so they're out there watching, and they're not just twiddling their thumbs. They're, you know, they have stopped different missiles from, you know, starting another third world war. You know, they do what they can without, you know, interfering, you know, physically in our lives. But, you know, because it affects them as well. Whatever we do here, I mean, even lifting, as you heard, you know, lifting your little finger sends out ripples into the universe, everything we do. So what we do affects them. And so you could even say, you know, look at it for selfish reasons to protect their own planets. But, you know, they're concerned about everyone in the universe, in our galaxy, in our solar system, and, you know, trying to whatever they can do to maintain the peace. So they're not just spectators. They're helping in any way that they can, you know, without, you know, ignoring the prime directive, so to speak, because people could relate to that from Star Trek.
Wow, a lot there to digest and think about. Thank you, Lonnie. Tracy?
Mm-hmm. Lonnie said it pretty well.
I did
want to add is that I don't want to touch on the conspiracy theories. However, a lot of the information or what people are thinking about and believe in is based in what has happened in the past, but also there are lower astral realms where there are things that I don't even want to think about. I don't want to put my consciousness on it, but are of a very lower frequency. And some of these people that are afraid of that or believe in this are in tune with that lower frequency. I think it's far more constructive rather than focusing on something that I don't want to be a part of, focusing on a much higher frequency and what can I learn and how can I be open to love and inspiration and creativity and being of service to other people instead of living a fear-based, oh my gosh, what about this? Or the story you mentioned about the fellow who murdered his children because he thought they had reptilian DNA. There probably was some type of destructive energy from his past. I doubt that it's there in the present with his children, but he was remembering something psychically and incurred a lot of karma by doing what he did. Had he had this understanding of past life therapy, he wouldn't have done that. He wouldn't have committed that act of crime against humanity and against the psychic ability and what each person needs to work out and learn. So it is interesting because I've met people that are conspiracy theorists about different things, and there's no logic to what they're talking about. So I choose not to engage in discussions about that because it doesn't fly with my belief system, which is based on logic and reason as much as I can with what I'm studying with Unarius.
Go ahead. No, I thought that was a very good point.
There's another point that comes to mind, and I'm not trying to paint it as a conspiracy theory, but why it could be beneficial to promote the idea of aliens, UFOs, you know, being negative and all of the negative things that are put out there about them. And that is, if you think back, well, even if government weren't talking about arming space against ETs or the panic caused by Orson Welles' radio broadcasts as a thing of the past, it doesn't take into account that people in power like to retain that power. So thinking about our Tesla talks, Tesla could have given everyone limitless free energy, but J.P. Morgan cut the funding to his work when he found out that fact. So there's been other inventors too who came up with inexpensive or free alternatives for the benefit of people, and they've had their inventions like bought and shelved or labs mysteriously burned down, etc. So the possibility that a more advanced race might show people how to produce free, clean energy, eliminate sickness and the need for drugs, all of that stuff, that threatens those who benefit from the current power structure.
Very, very true. I hadn't thought of that, but that is very true. Now, we're talking about UFOs, and we're talking about outer space. I know that ETs and UFOs exist because I've experienced them, and I've met other people who've experienced similar things to the things that I've experienced, and I've encountered organizations like Unarius that contain a lot of information that explains things, that shed light on certain topics that are very unclear. And also that contains information that I was personally given, and I was very surprised to find it in some of the Unarius books so forth. How do you know that the ETs are real?
Well, besides actual sightings, as was mentioned earlier, there's plenty of historical documentation if you want to find it. You know where to look. But for myself, I have past life memories of living on other planets and flying in spaceships. However, regarding people who can't accept the reality that we're not alone in the most, that we're not alone and that we're not the most intelligent life form in the universe of quintillions of planets, there's reasons why. So like, and Unarius has talked about this before in, on your shows, if you've never had a particular experience, there's nothing in your psychic anatomy to resonate with that information. So even with something that was visible and tangible, you simply wouldn't see it. It's like part of the advanced physics of seeing. And alternately, if the subject relates to something that caused a big shock in your past life, you might have psychic amnesia. And this might be a good place because Ezekiel was in the the promo for this show. I'm going to interject something here about Ezekiel. So, you know, Ezekiel, we're talking about the biblical prophet. And in his day, there weren't even motors. So, you know, how could he relate to seeing a spaceship? Well, Uriel made psychic contact with him to gain some clarity on what really took place. And he confirmed that it was a ship, and that he not only saw the inhabitants, but he was able to fly in it several times. And what he said is that they wanted him to relate to his people that there are more intelligent beings on other planets. And, you know, again, this would be really hard to accept in that day and time, right? But he was able to because he had flown such ships himself in Lemuria, Atlantis, and on other planets. So it was in his psychic. So it just kind of resonated with something that was already in his psychic. But how would he explain it to people who only knew of birds flying? So then in subsequent retellings of his story and translations by others, it was changed and distorted to whatever the storyteller understood or believed possible. So, you know, you have a lot of this distortion by people who don't understand, you know, either what they're translating or, you know, what they've seen. You know, they make up, well, it was a chariot on fire, you know, come from the heavens, whatever. But that's what's nice about having these advanced teachings at our fingertips, brought through not just by Ernest and Ruth Norman, you know, as advanced clairvoyants, but all of these, you know, people that on purpose that we've known in this lifetime, you know, as far as in the case of UFOs, you know, Adamski and Angelusi and others, and then you know, like scientists and artists and all these people have come through in the books. And it's like, again, you have to be preconditioned. But if you are, it makes sense when you read it, the logic of it, the science of it, which, you know, scientists might call it pseudoscience. But again, you have to be able to think outside of the box. And if you have those experiences in your psychic, it'll resonate as true. And like when I read, for example, the Spaceships of Ezekiel by, it was a NASA scientist, and, or I don't know, he had a prominent position in NASA. And, you know, he supposedly proved, at least to his own satisfaction, that what Ezekiel saw was a spaceship. And he did all of this math calculations and you know, a mechanical drawing. He said, I have the mechanical knowledge to know that this would work. But, you know, Ezekiel said, well, it didn't really look like his drawing, if you ever see a drawing on the front of his book. And the reason why is because he was trying to say how it could address all of the physical things of gravity and momentum and so on and so forth, as if it were a physical ship, and it wasn't. And that's what Ezekiel stressed. It was a spiritual ship, and they could make it look any way that they wanted for him to be able to conceive it, right? So, and the same with their appearance. They weren't really physical people, but, you know, they took on the appearance of physical, perfect specimens because that's what he could relate to. So, and they were advanced enough that they could do that. So, again, it's like if you have the preconditioning, you have the experiences in the past, it just makes sense. I'll tell you one other little quickie here. Sorry, I'm hogging so much time, Tracy. We do a lot of expos, you know, and a lot of people will just pass right by. They don't even see our booth, right? And then one time I was down in Mexico, and Unarius had the booth on the far corner of the expo floor from the entrance. And this young man, he just makes like a beeline diagonal cross all the way to us in the far corner, and he said, "This is exactly what I'm looking for." So it's just like if someone's preconditioned, it makes sense right away. If they're not, it's just like my dad. I could talk till I was blue in the face, and he still would object that it was, you know, impossible.
Yeah, that is a very good point. It needs to be borne in mind. Thank you, Lani. Tracy, you had said before that you had a UFO experience.
I did. I actually had several. And the first time, like I said, I was about 15 years old and I saw something. I grew up in New Jersey and I had a creek in my backyard, and I saw a lighted object flying, hovering above the creek for a while. And I was, you know, really excited about it. And then about probably 10, 15 years later, I was living in Florida and I lived in an apartment complex. And I was with a friend, and this was not even, like, it was almost dark twilight, and I saw a lighted object that, interestingly enough, hovered above my apartment and then, you know, moved fairly quickly and then came back and hovered above my apartment again. And I was with my friend, and we just stood there and watched it and went, wow, what is that? But, again, I didn't have any fear, and I've been preconditioned because when I started, you know, studying in air, it's like, oh, okay, I feel like that was possibly one of the scout ships, you know, from the mothership out to help precondition me to this idea of UFOs are real, which I'd never doubted from an early age. So it's, and one of the things that comes to mind in talking about this is I'm sure many people are aware of this, of when Cook traveled to what's now called the Cook Islands, and these natives that had lived there for hundreds and hundreds of years, a lot of them, when his ship came to that island, didn't see his ship because they didn't have anything in their history, in their relativity, in their consciousness, because they're probably newer souls, of what boats were. And just they were invisible. So it's a concept that a lot of people don't understand, but it's very real that if it's not part of your psychic anatomy, your soul, your past history, it won't be relative to you until you have that awareness that, you know, this is a reality. So it's something that's why so many people on our planet have so many different ideas about what's right, what's wrong, what's the best way to do things, because we all come from such an eclectic background. And we've mentioned this before on many, many shows, how our planet Earth is a melting pot for mostly from the Orion civilization, which was made up of over hundreds of planets and all different backgrounds. And the Orion people fought all the time, didn't get along, and were very technologically advanced but spiritually devoid. And when they incarnated over and over and over again, finally reached a point in our evolution where the brothers felt the best thing that we could do would be to incarnate on one planet and try and learn how to work out with each other, which is why we have, you know, people, we have so many different cultures that don't understand each other and think one culture is better than the other and one religion is better than the other, because we're all reliving what we did in Orion. So part of that lack of understanding is what we had in our past. And those souls who are a little bit more preconditioned and are waking up are starting to say, well, wait, this isn't a very positive, progressive way to live, because they've been touched by spirit. And that's what we have to look forward to, is, and that's what Unarius teachings are about. It's not exclusive to any one culture, any one particular people, any one place, any one planet, that we all have this higher self that we need to fan that flame of, and that's what these advanced beings are trying to do for all of us. As Lani mentioned earlier, that they have, you know, helped us along and averted different things happening. They not interfere, but are helping us so that we can wake up to our true spiritual nature and have communication with one another and experience peace, love, and inspiration in our lives, creativity in our lives, and be able to share this with these advanced beings who live on other planets, in particular in the Interplanetary Confederation, who want to, have already been through the same problems that we have, but have woken up to their spirit self and are living with us ideas. You know what? We can have a blend of science and spirit. It doesn't have to be all science and no spirituality, or all, or, you know, just these fear-based thought patterns that people live with, that we can understand where these fears come from and let go of these fears by working, you know, the working out healing process, so that we can live a more progressive life. So we have a lot to look forward to, but we have a long way to go.
Wow. That contained a powerful wallop in there. You had everything from the reason for that we're here to the fact that we don't need to be. Thank you so much, Tracy. Now, unfortunately, we only have a short amount of time left, so there's definitely a part two type of episode if you guys would like at some other point. But you had brought up the Interplanetary Confederation, and Lonnie brought up Star Trek. If we could flesh that out a little bit before we close for today, that would be awesome.
Lonnie, why don't you talk about Star Trek and the relationship to the Interplanetary Confederation?
Well, in a nutshell, and I think we've given this definition before, that it's like an interplanetary United Nations. And it existed millions of years ago, but it was broken up by, you know, the Orion. That's a whole another topic. But I think a lot of the concepts that are supposedly science fiction that you see on Star Trek are subconscious memories or unconscious memories of people who were involved in these things, of, you know, the wars that you see between the different races, different planets. And, you know, so they call it science fiction so that they can watch it and feel, you know, entertained and stuff. But it really is closer to science fact. You know, they may embellish some things, but mostly, you know, it's like energy doesn't come out of nothing. So, you know, if you're writing about it, somehow it got into your psychic, right? So that's what a lot of it is. I don't know if that's a brief answer so that we have, so Tracy has time.
Thank you. Tracy?
I don't have anything to add at this point.
Okay. We have a few minutes left, and the Unarius is so wonderful that I'd love for more people to find their way there to explore. And Unarius makes it a point never to force anyone to read certain things or to do certain things. But there's a wealth of information to explore and numerous treasures to find. A lifetime isn't enough. So Lonnie?
Lonnie what?
How can people find their way to Unarius?
Oh. Oh, well, we have our website, which is unarius.org. We have a YouTube channel, which is Unarius 33, I believe. Go ahead, Tracy. What?
No, I was just saying yes because you said you weren't sure. It is Unarius 33, and that's
Okay. I thought you wanted to correct me.
No.
We have a new Vimeo channel. We have Facebook, and we have a huge event coming up that Tracy can tell you all about because she's making the postcard for it right now.
Awesome.
Sure, and we also have ongoing classes in past life therapy. We have workshops. During normal times, we do go to different expos, particularly recently to the New Life Expo in New York City, but we have gone other places. And but we do have probably anyone who's interested in this topic would be most interested in our annual Interplanetary Conclave of Light celebration, and it usually takes place the second weekend of October. This year it's October 9th and 10th, and it takes place in El Cajon, San Diego. And it's a two-day event, and it celebrates the idea that we're not alone in the universe and have a positive and progressive future. We also champion this idea of the cosmic visionaries, the founders, Ernest and Ruth Norman, and what they did in the teachings, but also what these planets of the Interplanetary Confederation are like, what their story is, and how we can learn from them. The event takes place at the Unarius Center, and there are an open house. There is there'll be talks, there'll be demonstrations, or talks, tours of the center and the different futuristic artifacts that we have. There'll be live music. We also have a past life therapy workshop, a creativity workshop, and then the event is capped off with a mental transmission from the Space Brothers. The event is wonderful if you can attend in person, but if you can't, most of it is streamed live, and there's more information on our website at unarius.org. Please check us out, and we also have a website on the Interplanetary Confederation if you'd like to learn more about these planets. So we have a wealth of information, as Hercules said, and we'd love to have you join, call, email, visit, to learn more about what Unarius is about and how you can learn more about yourself and about our positive future and about these Space Brothers and space travel and what we have to look forward to.
Yeah, and if people have questions, I'm sure it's on our website too, but they can either write us at Uriel, U-R-I-E-L, at unarius.org, U-N-A-R-I-U-S, unarius.org. They can call. We have an 800 number. Let's see, what was it? 800-475-7062. We have a local number. We have materials in Spanish even. Throw in a little plug.
That line translated.
And I want to thank both of you. I enjoyed this conversation a great deal. I learned a thing or three. thank you also for all the work that you put into making this episode happen beforehand. I'm greatly appreciative of it.
Oh, we love the opportunity.
Thank you again for having us on. Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Hercules.
And thank you both, and thanks to everybody who tuned in, whether you listened live, whether you called in, whether you clicked on a link and it brought you here, or whether you're going to be checking us out later on demand. Until next time, this is all of us wishing all of you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And we're going to finish with If You Can Dream by Virginia Ackley, Unarius encourages creativity. Virginia is very creative, and she was on one of the early shows, and subsequently she's won lots of awards for her music. So creativity, we've talked about that a lot, and on future shows we're going to focus on creativity, and maybe you too can find and share your gift.
If you can dream, if you can fly, then your heart can touch the sky, but only if you can dream. If love is true and love is real, pain and sorrow soon will heal, but only if you can dream. Dream till you wake. Dream till you feel. Dream till you know it. Dream till it's real. If you can dream, then you can be bound by love and yet be free, but only if you can dream. When love and trust are deep and fair, there is nothing your heart won't dare, but only if you can dream. Dream till you wake. dream. Dream till you know it. Dream. Till it's real.
Dream.
Dream.